Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that loves Christmas as much as anyone. As for Christmas movies, well, we prefer those with original plot lines. One of the three movies we'll be discussing this week, Happiest Season, is a Christmas movie, even if it's original in only one obvious sense, and even that's questionable. But before we talk about it, let's tackle a couple of films that boast Oscar prestige. The first is Hillbilly Elegy, which was directed by Ron Howard, and the second is Eduardo Ponte's The Life Ahead, which stars the great Sophia Loren. Let's begin with a look at life in rural America. J.D. Vance's best-selling 2016 memoir, Hillbilly Elegy, does a bit more than explore the life lived by Vance himself, whose ties to rural Kentucky both marked his childhood and shaped his adulthood. But while it isn't nearly the sociological study that might have been, something that details the historical occurrences, both societal and personal, that made Vance's ancestral home so economically deprived, it does document the effects of that deprivation. And unfortunately, director Ron Howard, twice an Oscar nominee and once a Best Director winner for 2002's A Beautiful Mind, focuses almost exclusively on those effects in his adaptation of Vance's book. Featuring Amy Adams as Vance's mother and an almost unrecognizable Glenn Close as his grandmother, or as he refers to her, his mamma, Howard's film is basically the rags-to-riches story of a guy who has to overcome poverty, family dysfunction, drug addiction, and the occasional bout of domestic violence to claim his part of the American dream. Slickly done, as Howard's films tend to be, Hillbilly Elegy nevertheless offers up even fewer answers as to how and why poverty happens than even its source material.
The source material is probably a decent place to start because Hillbilly Elegy generated a lot of controversy.
When it came out in 2016, yeah.
Right, about what J.D. Vance was trying to portray in his book. And I do think that, Dan, you and I may have different reactions to it, but I do think that the book was, of course, it's a book. It was much more multi-layered in terms of maybe it didn't give us a good insight into what people were dealing with in this patch of Appalachia. But at least it gave us greater insight into the family than does this movie. Because one of the problems with this film is, to me, it was very one note. It was sort of everyone screaming and yelling all the time, which there are families like that. But
put down that knife.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and some families that come from Southern Europe tend to yell and scream a lot as well. But this one-note notion of the family being in crisis all the time, I think, did a disservice to even the source material. And so I think the only reason why people should see this film is for the performances of the two lead actress, Amy Adams, and Glenn Close, because they do transform themselves almost in an eerie way. If at one point in the film, you see the real people. So at the end, it shows you the real people. So Bev, the daughter played by Amy Adams, and Mama, the grandma played by Glenn Close, appear in several different sort of incarnations at various points, but their relationship remains more or less the same. We see the Glenn Close character become a savior of sorts to the J.D. Vance character. But at the same time, I was just struggling to figure out, is this the only purpose for their acting and transforming themselves physically and so forth to be Oscar bait? And, you know, that just runs through your mind like the entire film. So I think this movie, in the end, misses on almost every level. But I think, Nathan, we were talking about you're looking at this as a adapted screenplay notion. So tell us what you thought about it.
Well, unlike you, I did not read the book Hillbilly Elegy. So I was coming into this knowing pretty much only about the controversy surrounding J.D. Vance. And so much of the conversation surrounding this movie already has been kind of politically motivated. A lot of the conservative pundits are saying that, you know, liberal movie critics are going in with their, you know, their hackles up already because there's kind of this inherently conservative ideology driving J.D. Vance's, you know, worldview, which I think is just total nonsense because this is one of the most politically neutered movies I've ever seen about issues that have been widely politicized. I mean, and I think that's okay. I don't think that you necessarily need to come to material like this with a soapbox in hand, but at least give us something beyond the really basic melodrama of this screenplay. I mean, you mentioned the performances, and I think that's where the is at its best, even though this kind of acting is not usually the sort that I gravitate towards. I mean, Amy Adams and Glenn Close are technically very good. It's true. And I'm sure they'll get Academy Award nominations. And I think Glenn Close will probably win it. And you're right. When you see the photos of the real people at the end, you go, wow, they actually did a really good job of approximating what those people look like. My favorite performance, I think, just because she's sort of the underdog here, is Haley Bennett as J.D. Vance's sister, Lindsay, because she has all of the same struggles as both of those two characters, but she gets to underplay her part. And I wonder why she isn't the protagonist of this movie, because J.D. Vance, and here's the big problem with Hillbilly Elegy as a film, J.D. Vance is one of the most boring protagonists I could possibly imagine. I mean, every time he shows up on screen, it's like white noise or something. And this movie is less a testament to the hardworking people of Appalachia than it is a monument to how great J.D. Vance is. And that's just so boring. He has no shades at all. He's just virtuous from beginning to end, save for a little part where there's some teenage rebellion going on, which we've seen in a million other movies. And so I was just really frustrated by this because there are pieces in here that work. I mean, the character of Bev, for instance, I think is a potentially interesting one. I mean, she's this single teenage mother that nonetheless got an education, became a nurse, and that job is what led to her opioid addiction, which inspired her downward spiral. And the Glenn Close character, you know, she's experienced her own abuse in the past, but has managed to kind of rise above it and doesn't let it define her. And there are scenes where you see that, but the movie itself is just so flat. And I wonder if somebody other than Ron Howard had directed this, I was thinking like a Sean Baker, you know, the guy who made The Florida Project, or Deborah Granick, who made Winter's Bone. Imagine if someone like that had gotten this material. Maybe there could have been some life here.
You mentioned two films of that did a good job, in my opinion, of
the same thing,
the struggles. And The Florida Project even sort of goes to almost this fantasy place, but it seemed realistic in the context in which it arose. But Winter's Bone, which maybe a lot of people have not seen, was the initial, or one of the initial Jennifer Lawrence vehicles. So before she became famous, before she did the Hunger Games and so forth, she starred as pretty much an unknown in that film. And I thought that captured things well. And the other thing about the book is at one point you find out that Mama and her husband moved to Middletown, Ohio, or wherever it was. And I think he says in the book that they had an annual income of like $100,000 a year, which is like huge. And so I think that J.D. Vance was caught between, I think he was an outlier in what he was trying to portray, because, you know, his mom was educated. His grandma was, and her husband were making money. And so he sort of is looking through the window, and then he shades it in a way that just doesn't work in the book so much. And then Ron Howard extrapolates from that, and the film doesn't work either. Yeah.
Well, J.D. Vance is also a millionaire venture capitalist. So, you know, a true hillbilly.
Yeah. The problem I had with the movie was the same problem I had with the book, which was twofold. One is it gives absolutely no background as to what are the larger issues that could cause poverty in this part of the country. What happened there? I mean, and that's why I read the book, to try to get that. It's not there. The second problem I have is, what are we left with then? What we're left with then is, man, I had a really rough childhood, but I made it. I mean, come on. You know, a lot of us had problems growing up. A lot of us went through the same kinds of things. You know, maybe our mama didn't set fire on our grandpa, but It's all relative. Read Mary Carr's Liars Club, for example.
More educated.
Yes, even. Exactly. So
yeah, and I mean, and that's not, it's not to say that that's not a compelling story if it's right? done right. It's a perfectly justifiable thing to make a film about. Precisely. But Hillbilly Elegy, it just doesn't. I mean, there's nothing here. And when you're dealing with this kind of material, you know, you have to have a point of view. You have to have more than just scenes of Hollywood actors in thrift store clothes screaming at each other, which, as you said, Mary Pat, is basically what this movie amounts to. It's really disappointing. I also want to say that this movie is getting ripped apart by critics, yeah. And I guess we kind of contributed to the pile on. It's not nearly as bad as a lot of critics have made it out to be, but it's so maudlin and so everything you expect a movie like this to be that it's not really worth your time.
And as you point out, Ron Howard was both the right and the wrong director, because he's right in the sense that it's slickly done, it's well made, the production values, the performances for the most part, the principals are fine, but he just doesn't get to the raw bone of the story. So we're talking about Happiest Season when we talk about critical reactions. Critics are going overboard on that one. We'll talk about that in a second. At any rate, we were just talking about Hillbilly Elegy. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at The Life Ahead and Happiest Season. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. Back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Ron Howard's Hillbilly Elegy. Let's now move to the Italian-made The Life Ahead and the holiday offering Happiest Season. Let's begin with the screen return of the great Italian actress, Sophia Loren. Loren's son, Edoardo Ponti, isn't the first filmmaker to adapt Romain Gary's novel into a movie. Moshe Mizrahi's 1977 version, Madame Rosa, starred another great actress, Frances Simone Signoret. Gary's original novel tells the story of Madame Rosa, played in Ponti's film by Loren, a Holocaust survivor and former prostitute who now lives on what she can earn by watching the children of women still working the streets. One of those children, Momo, in both Gary's book and Ponti's film, a Muslim orphan, is a troubled waif who comes to feel affection for Madame Rosa and is changed by the guidance and support provided both by her and a friendly shop owner. Played by the talented young Senegalese actor Ibrahim Agueye, Momo is the film's heart, and he narrates his own progress into adult life that occurs even as Madame Rosa's comes to an end. But it is Loren herself, who won her first Oscar in 1962 for the drama Two Women, who is the film's best tie to cinematic greatness.
Yeah, I had a hard time with this one because this is a movie that, you know, was trying really hard to work on me. I mean, it has this cute, precocious kid in a precarious situation at the center. It has this, you know, great movie star making a triumphant return to the screen. I think the last feature that she was in was that dreadful musical Nine with Daniel Day-Lewis. That was the last time we saw Sophia Loren in a film. So it was great to see her again. And I mean, the relationship between them is sweet and the two performances are good, but this movie just never really clicked for me and I couldn't really figure out why. And I think, I mean, maybe it's something similar to what we talked about with the first film, which is that it just doesn't have enough grit to it. I mean, it's almost too upbeat and sunny for this particular material, maybe. I'm not totally sure. And right before I watched this, I watched another film on Netflix, which maybe we could talk about down the road, which is called I'm No Longer Here, which is dealing with kind of similar subject matter. It's about this wayward teenager who escapes from gang violence in Mexico and kind of tries to find his way on his own in New York City. And that movie has just as much style as The Life Ahead does, but it felt more authentic to me. The feeling felt more authentic and it felt more lived in. So I don't know, this almost felt too glossy and Hollywoodized, even though it's not a Hollywood production. But like you said, I mean, stylistically, it's very well done. It's very polished. The performances are good, but I didn't feel the emotion that I think it was going for. And maybe that's a personal problem. I don't know. I'll be curious to see what you say.
I don't disagree that it could have been a little grittier and that would have felt somehow more authentic, I guess. But again, it was amazing to see Sophia Loren on the screen again. And I don't know if Dan and I can be objective about The Life Ahead, because of course we were enjoying listening to the Italian language. And we should warn people, because apparently you get to choose the version of the film that you want. So I would think that most people would want to listen to it in its original language with subtitles. But one of the other options is a dubbed version.
Well, when I turned it on, that's the default version. So I had to change it to Italian.
That's what I wanted to warn people. Even though the Italians have perfected dubbing to a greater extent than most people across the world, it's still not what you want to, that's not the way you want to see this particular
film. No, you want to hear Sophia Loren speaking Italian in her own voice. Yes.
Yeah. And so I think that there's much to like about this. It's a movie that almost anyone could watch if, I don't know, at what age you start reading subtitles. And Nathan, you're probably not a good example because you were probably a zygote when you were watching these films. And
mommy, yeah, I was watching Truffaut from the crib.
Yes, something such as that.
Yeah.
But I think it's a sweet movie. I think it's a good holiday movie and it's great acting.
Yes, it's a good holiday movie as long as you understand we're talking about Italian prostitutes here.
Fellini Christmas.
I'm going to back up Mary Pat here in that I not only liked Loren, and I always have for many different kinds of reasons, but Ibrahima Gueye, this is his first film. And the kid was great. The kid was terrific. So, I mean, if you're just into performances, yeah. But I can't disagree with you, Nathan. I think that this movie is a little bit like Hillbilly Elegy that we talked about in the first half of the show, in that it's a slick production. Yeah, there's really not a whole lot of grit to it. But still, you know, for those of us who have a sense of Italian cinema, we'll watch it any day. So why don't we move on from there? And we just finished talking about The Life Ahead. Let's close with Happiest Season. How many different stories can be found regarding a family's celebration of Christmas? Only so many, apparently, if writer-director Clea Duvall's film Happiest Season is any indication. Abby and Harper are a loving couple who at the last minute decide to spend Christmas with Harper's family. But secrets abound, not just between Abby and Harper, but among the whole Caldwell family. From Father Ted, who has political ambitions, to Mother Tipper, who runs a taut domestic ship, to sisters Sloane and Jane, whose need for attention and approval from their parents is as great as Harper's, and which leads to a seething undercurrent of resentment among all three. Yet, Happiest Season is, for the most part, a comedy, or at least it tries to pass for one. And to be fair, it does offer up a couple of decent laugh lines. The only really original aspect of the film, though, is the fact that Abby and Harper, played respectively by the actresses Kristen Stewart and Mackenzie Davis, don't constitute what, up until relatively recently, has been portrayed by Hollywood as your typical romantic couple. Even that, though, doesn't feel as original as Duvall, an actress herself, would have us believe.
Dan, I think that you said everything that needs to be said about this movie in the intro. Maybe I'm the only one who feels this way. I thought this was pretty much a fail on every level. I mean, when you think of Kristen Stewart, who I think has turned into an amazing actor, and when you think of her talent, and then you look at the other people who were in this film, you know, such as Mary Steenburgen and Victor Garber, this was a waste of all of their talents. It is stereotyped to the max.
Stereotypes, yes. We were predicting right. the lines. What about your parents? I didn't tell them. Abby, what are you doing in the closet? I just feel like you're suffocating me. Those are scenes, those are lines that I said before the actors said them.
Yeah. So I don't know why this has gotten any decent reviews. I think that Chris Hewitt from the Minneapolis Star Tribune said something like, hey, even lesbians are entitled to bad, horrible Christmas movies. And that's exactly how I felt about this film. So Nathan, you know, maybe you're more of a holiday movie aficionado than I am. Give us your impression.
I am not. I am not a Christmas movie person. I'm not the kind of person that puts on Christmas movies when it hits Thanksgiving. It's just not my jam. But I liked this. you know, like the last two movies, I was complaining about the edges being sanded off serious issues and oh, I knew exactly what was going to happen. And here I almost think the predictability is like a feature rather than a bug, because I mean, this is a Christmas movie. It's a rom-com and it does everything you expect. And you're right. There is not a single person on the planet who won't know exactly what's going to happen in the next scene of Happiest Season as it plays out. And you're right. There are all of these dumb little side plots, like the slapstick bit about her going in the closet, get it. And there's this bizarre thing involving a shoplifted necklace that doesn't go anywhere. But I just really liked these actors. I mean, I love Kristen Stewart in anything these days, but you've got Aubrey Plaza, Dan Levy from Schitt's Creek has a couple of really funny lines. Alison Brie is in there. As you said, Mary Steenburgen and Victor Garber. So yeah, I mean, they're all pretty people. They're wearing nice sweaters. Their Christmas tree was fancy looking. I like that. And I know that there's been like arguments online about this movie about like whether or not the right characters end up with the right significant others. And I don't think I disagree, but also I don't know if I care too much. But yeah, I mean, this is like a breezy 90 minutes and I didn't mind it. So I'm not going to die on this hill, but I liked it a lot more than you did.
If you have something else to do while this movie is on, you know, it could be a nice background distraction. That's how I felt about
sure.
it. And the only interesting character to me is the one we haven't mentioned, which is the youngest sister. I mean, and she's so out there.
Oh, played by Mary Holland, who co-wrote the script. And she's funny.
She was
worth the laughs. Yes, exactly. At any rate, that was Happiest Season. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. Early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Hillbilly Elegy and The Life Ahead. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial. We'll again check out all the best that streaming cinema has to offer. Until then, remember these words from Sophia Loren. I don't understand people who hide from their past. Everything you live through helps to make you the person you are now. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.